You can't get in those little, cute little cubby holes that your kid as a kid squeeze into and get up in the tree. Forget it. The whole island's kind of lost to you. A lot of other things are just too small. It's a small world after all. And they've made the whole place for the kids. In fact, probably disastrous. Have you ever taken a child and get on some of the rides? That spaceship ride in Tomorrowland, I was wondering why I was having such problems, and I realized when the kids fit in them, their shoulders hit the side, and so they can pretty much go anything with them. But if you get on the smaller rides and you're my height, your shoulders don't hit, it hits you in the hips. And so as the centrifugal force starts building up, you feel like you're being poured out of this thing onto, 30 feet below or whatever. So there's just some places you don't fit. Now, what this has to do with the sermon is, if you look at the passage I have up here, part of the context that Stephen just read, for by him all things were created, both in heavens and the earth, visible, invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created by him and for him. Well, the songs we just sang. This is my Father's world. And most people in the world, have this concept that God doesn't fit in this world. And they're trying to get him out of it. And what they don't realize is they don't fit in God's world. Now, to what extent is it his world? And this is what we're going to be looking at, because the next verse, 17, talks about all things consist in him. When one observes the chaos and turmoil reported on a daily basis, one often concludes that things are out of control. The Christian can calm himself by understanding that no matter how bad things seem, it's still not man's world. It's God's. He's in control. He's still in charge. He will work things out for those that are his elect. But of what does he have control, and to what extent is he in control? That's what we're going to be looking at in this lesson. Things we need to think about of just how much God is a part of our lives. And therefore, should be taken into consideration as we get up in every morning and start our day. How much is God going to be a part of it? And what we've kind of gotten out of our minds, we have to start thinking about. Now, as we start off this, from the very beginning, God is the first cause. The whole universe was made by him. He caused it to happen, spoke it into existence. But it was with a purpose. It wasn't as a lot of people think that, he set things up like a big clock, got it started, and then walked away. Notice in Job 37, whether for correction, which God does a lot, or for his world, or for loving kindness, because that's the kind of person he is, even though it's his, he allows us to exist in it, he causes it to happen. This is not a mechanical place we live in. This is a world where everything, just about everything that happens, is because God causes it. He was the first cause, and he keeps on causing things. Indisputably, the most universal and most certain of scientific laws is the law of cause and effect, or as it is commonly known, the law of causality. In science, laws are seen as reflecting actual regularities in nature. That is, scientists look at what's out there, and see what keeps working and what causes it, whatever. That's what they're looking at. Richard von Mises observed, "We may only add that almost all philosophers regard the law of causality as the most important. There is hardly a more useful and more reliable rule of behavior than to assume of any occurrence that we come to know that some other one preceded it." That is, whatever you're seeing, whatever kind of motion, what kind of verb is in action or whatever, something preceded that and caused it to go. John Gerstner, in his book, Reasons for Faith, correctly reasoned, because every effect must have a cause, there must ultimately be one cause that is not an effect, but the pure cause, or however indeed one can explain the effects. That is, at some point as we go back, well, this preceded this, this preceded that, whatever, at one point you have to stop and go, okay, this was the initial cause. Because this thing can't go back, you know, ad infinite. A cause that is itself an effect would not explain anything, but would require another explanation. But the argument has shown that the universe as we know it is an effect and cannot be by self explanatory. That is, something can't cause itself. Now, how can you have something that has no imagination, no power, no will, it's not even there, suddenly come up with a determination to create itself? That doesn't make sense. It requires something to explain it, which is not like itself, an effect. In fact, what's pointed out in the book that the one class just got through going through, is that when you're talking about cause and effect, that's a law within the boundaries of the universe of all physical laws, cause and effect. But God steps outside of that sphere. He's not of this world. You know, he's the one that caused it all. There must be an uncaused cause, and that's point stands. Thus, our opening passage is scientifically correct. God is the first cause for all things that have been created. But that was just the start. God has a hand in all things. In Romans 8:28, we know that God causes all things to work together for good for those who love God, for those who are called according to his purpose. This is Paul's statement. He says, as Christians, especially as examining the scriptures and the world around us, we should know that God causes all things to work together. But notice, for good. And specifically for those that are called according to his purpose. Let me go back to the example of places sometimes we realize we don't belong. Have you ever been in a person's house and you realize the house is maybe built by them, designed for them, every room, everything is specifically the way they want it. It's their house and you do not feel at home there. But you may go up and say upstairs and see a room that they've set aside for one of the children, especially maybe a small girl. And you know, you realize the colors on the walls, the curtains, everything else, the stuffed toys. You know, this is definitely not your room either. But it is designed for someone. Even in this bigger house, you know, owned by one person, there is a room set aside that's livable for a smaller person. Now, this is our world. It is God's house. But for those that are Christians, Jesus has said, in my Father's house are many rooms, specifically designed for us. And in this world, you know, even though the world itself was designed for God, that's our opening passage, it's designed by him and for him. He's made room for us, those that are called according to his purpose. It's not that God doesn't belong in the world of men. Evil men do not belong in the world of God. This is God's world, and it's our world as God's children. We have priorities over everybody else. And sometimes we and they forget that. But the concept that God causes all things to happen, whether good or evil, is not a teaching of Christ. This is the way many in Islam interpret the work of Allah, but is incorrect. This misconception, rather, is often stated as an argument that God also causes evil, and this is simply not true. Again, if you look at the statement, causes all things for good. God made man upright, but man is the one who sought many ways to lower himself below what God intended. That's according to Ecclesiastes 7:29. God is not the source of evil, rather, he always stands opposed to it, while Satan and man himself are the real culprits of the evil in the world. What Paul's point is that no matter what decisions men make or what actions they take, they are given free will to do that. God will make it turn out right for those who remain loyal to him. Thus, God does not cause evil, but he will surely deal with it, and in many cases, make it work for his elect. This is seen graphically in the book of Esther, where the law signed by King Ahasuerus, ordering the extinction of the Jews, turned out to be really the death of their enemies. And Haman, who was hanged on the gallows, he had built specifically for Mordecai. God has a sort of poetic justice in dealing with men. When the Hebrew writer states that the Son of God upholds all things with power by his word, he means all good things. So in Hebrews 1:3, when it says he is the radiance of his glory, the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by his word of power. This is how God deals with things. He has a hand in everything. And he's so powerful, you know, he doesn't have to conjure up something. He just speaks it into existence. He makes it happen. Now, we could end right here, but there's, you know, things beyond this that we need to look at. I mean, that's just the broad picture. What things are we talking about? Well, it gets back to what we're talking about, you know, the universe has to have a will. You know, if it doesn't have a will, how can it cause anything to happen? You know, a will is vital, especially when you're dealing with laws of nature, especially when you want to supersede those laws. Okay, we've made this point before. Okay, as I stand up here, I'm subject to the law of gravity. In fact, you know, if I can't, I can let my, you know, self grow limp and I'll just, you know, splatter out on the floor. But, you know, as we stand here, our, you know, if your arms don't hang this way, okay, why? Because gravity pulls them down, and you get tired, whatever. And so, gravity overrides everything, almost. But notice when the hand begins to do this, it is superseding the law of gravity. It's overriding it by a higher law, the law of my will. And everything needs that behind it in order to grow and function and do what it needs to do. Now, God gave man a will, and he can exercise it and do things, good or bad. But what about the rest of the universe? What causes, when you put a seed in the ground, especially when, you know, Paul talks about what you do is, you know, you it's dying in the ground. But at some point, it starts to germinate. You know, it starts to, you know, begin to produce some sort of life. It knows that it has to start growing at a certain time, and it knows when it starts, you know, poking out, you know, from the seed, it knows which direction to go. You know, wouldn't it be silly if all plants, you know, grew down where they couldn't get sunlight? They automatically grow up. Whichever way you put the seed in, it automatically goes up. It has a will to grow. And that will, behind all of nature, is God. When the scriptures start talking about he causes the grass to grow, every last blade of grass you see in the whole world is doing what it's doing because God, in his omnipotent power causes each blade, he is the will behind it, causing it to grow. He causes, you know, the rain to fall. Every last little drop that comes out of the clouds, God willed it. This is not a mechanical universe. This is what we have to understand, the things that are going on. When we are in a proper relationship with God, when we are in praying grounds with God, as Elijah, who prayed, and for 3.5 years it didn't rain. And then prayed again, and it began to pour, and the earth brought forth fruit. This is, you know, the end of James, telling us this is the relationship we should have with God, where our prayers are answered. And we can have this power in this world that's God's. The following passages show how much God is involved in the ways we normally do not even consider, which is a big crying shame, to walk out in the world and not realize how much we owe to God with every step we take and every breath we take. Some of the promises he made to Israel still hold true to his people anytime, and they are far-reaching in scope. We forget that. You know, we're studying, well, the promises made to Israel, you know, there's going to be a Christ, whatever. And we forget those promises to Noah and the rainbow, the promises to Abraham, you know, in the seed blessing all the nations. They're still valid, and they're only valid because God wills it. He makes it come true. God protects us from our enemies. He even dealing severely with them. Remember when we studied Samuel? And Samuel is going around, he's putting all this effort in to try to get the tribes brought back together again. And they're under Philistine rule. And he's got all the leaders at a certain mountain, and they're trying to offer up a sacrifice to God, and the Philistines hear about it, and they come to destroy the Israelites. And the Israelites are unarmed. And it's incredible then that God steps in and drives the Philistines away because the Israelites couldn't do a thing. And we need to learn to depend on God that way. It's not our missiles or firearms or whatever that make the difference. It's how much God is behind us that protects a nation or individuals. He makes the physical environment around us flourish. He showers us with blessings. He causes righteousness to well up and to flood over a nation. Deuteronomy 28:7. The Lord will curse your enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. He will come out against you one way and flee. They will come out before you one way and flee before you another way. The pictures we gave, you know, God dealing with things. David with Goliath, you know, on the part of Lot and his family with Sodom and Gomorrah. In Job 38, who has cleft a channel for the flood or a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land without people, on a desert without a man in it, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make the seeds of grass to sprout? We get a little arrogant with our gardens, thinking, well, you know, we put the seed in the ground and we grow it, whatever. But who does it when all these things flourish in a desert where no man is? God taking care of his world. Ezekiel 34:26. And I will make them in the places around my hill a blessing, and I will cause showers to come down in their seasons. They will be showers of blessing. We think that the weather patterns are mechanical. We can put a satellite in the air and see it coming, but we really can't predict exactly what it's going to do. You know, that's why probably the best weather instrument these newscasters can have is a window in their wall, you know, to look outside and see what's happening. It's all up to God. You know, the book of Malachi brings out the point of, okay, you stick the seed in the ground and you think, you know, the seasons are there and everything's going to come up and nothing's happening. Why? Because you're taking better care of yourself than you are of God's house. It's not mechanical. You know, if you begin to irritate God, he's going to make sure the normal things he blesses you with, that he blesses you with, are going to stop coming. Isaiah 61. As for the earth brings forth its sprouts, and as a garden causes the things sown in it to spring up, so the Lord will cause righteousness and praise to spring up before all the nations. So we're not just talking about the physical earth around us. Just as God raises up the things in the ground, he can also raise up things like righteousness and praise in a nation. He has a hand in how nations operate. He builds them up, he pulls them down at his whim. Even when they were dead as a people, Israel was brought back to life. In the Old and New Testament, people have physically been raised from the dead. God can also cause spiritual life to rekindle, not only in people, but in governments and nations as well. Notice Ezekiel 37. Thus says the Lord God to these bones, behold, I will cause breath to enter you that you may come to life. And I will put sinews on you and make flesh grow on you, cover you with skin and put breath in you that you may come alive. And you will know that I am the Lord. That's a prophecy to Israel, a dying nation, a dead nation. You know, a vision of a valley full of bones. And God is promising, I will put flesh on this nation again and raise it up from the dead. In Amos 8 and 9, and it will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that I will make the sun go down at noon and make the earth dark in broad daylight. Although this is poetic justice, you know, with Amos, or a poetic license, God has been known to do it physically. Cause the sun either to stop at zenith or to go black at midday. He did it at the time of Christ, in the days of Moses and Joshua. For better or worse, God is in control. As mentioned, God does not cause evil, but on the contrary, to many people's chagrin, he does deal with it when it rears its ugly head. In Psalm 79, the psalmist said, thou dost cause judgment to be heard from heaven. The earth feared and was still when God rose to judgment to save all the humble of the earth. God brings forth judgment to punish the wicked, preserve the humble. He demonstrates his authority and anger as experienced by the Canaanites. In Isaiah 30 and 30 says, the Lord will cause their voice, his voice of authority to be heard, and the descending of his arm to be seen in fierce anger, and in the flame of consuming fire, in a cloudburst, downpour, hailstones. It doesn't matter to God. He can use anything he wants to bring somebody down, and there's not a thing they can do about it. They can build the biggest walls or dig the deepest trenches and moats. They can't keep it out. It's interesting that when the Assyrians approached Jerusalem and handed Hezekiah an ultimatum to surrender, that Herodotus mentions what happened that night. A plague of field mice entered into the Assyrian camp and struck everybody. So when Hezekiah went out the next morning, just about every last one of the Assyrian army was dead. And God used field mice to do it. When the Jews sinned, he put an end to their good times and raised up individuals with the might to destroy the idols and unclean teachers of the land. Hosea 2:11, I will also put an end to all their gaiety, their feasts, their new moons, their Sabbaths, and all their festival assemblies. Zechariah 13, and it will come about in that day, declares the Lord of hosts, that I will cut off the names of the idols from the land, and they will no longer be remembered. And I will also remove the prophets and the unclean spirit from the land. Reading this, it doesn't sound pertinent to us. But when was the last time you saw an idol in the land? When was the last time you know of anybody or any nation that worshiped the gods of the Greeks or the Romans or any of the gods of the Canaanites or have even seen an idol from that period of time? God kept his promise. It still shows. It's a lasting evidence that God can do what he promised to do. For those who want to believe lies, God promises to help them, driving their minds to become reprobate. 2 Thessalonians 2:11. For this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they may believe what is false, in order that they may all be judged who did not believe the truth, but who took pleasure in unrighteousness. This is a big warning for how we approach things and what you choose to believe in. If you choose to believe error as opposed to truth and live your life that way, God will make it so that you can't get out of that rut, that you never will believe the truth. He will get your mind reprobate or stuck in that mode so that you will be a walking dead person in this life even before judgment. On the other hand, he can assist those who want to do right and to walk in truth. In James, the first chapter, he goes, is anyone lacking in wisdom? Let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally. Someone once said, you can't teach wisdom. It's just hard. You know, it's hard to get someone to sit down and start, you know, thinking about the right things and practicing them and whatever. You know, who knows how one gets wisdom? Except if with a humble heart they sit there and ask God for it. Then you'll see wise people. In Psalms 143:8, let me hear thy loving kindness in the morning, the psalmist said, for I trust in thee. Teach me the way to which I should walk, for to thee I lift my soul. Ezekiel 36:27, I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances. God can do that, so that your way in this world is a path of truth and righteousness and justice. As part of an invitation, two things we want to leave you with. In Acts 17, as Paul is trying to convince the Athenians, he actually quotes one of their own poets. It's a work about Zeus and a concept that the Greeks had about Zeus. And Paul borrows it to say, this is really the character of the one true God. In him we live and move and have our being. Now that goes exactly with our opening statement. It's God's world, created by him and for him, especially, you know, for the Son. Okay? And we're allowed to live in that. God has prepared a room for us, a place for us, here and in the world to come. Not for anybody else. And as we go in this life, we have to realize that in him we live, we move, we have our very being, our essence. When you forget that, you lose all that. This is why, as is being tempted by, you know, the devil in Luke 4, Jesus says, you know, that man does not live by bread alone. We get caught up in the job and earning a living and bringing the bread home for the table, you know, to feed the family. But Christ, you know, points out most specifically, we don't live by that alone. Yeah, that's part of this physical thing. But what's really more important is the fact that, are you taking in the spiritual food? Are you living off the Word of God? You know, if you haven't got that, not only are you starving to death spiritually in this life, you'll have absolutely nothing to sustain you in the life to come. This is why Christians are far-thinking. They're open-minded. They have eyes of faith that can see things that other people can't. We realize what life is all about, and we realize that without God, we are nothing. But when we turn to Him and give ourselves open to Him, we can do great things, and we become great people, just for the fact that we're His possession. And this is, you know, always the invitation that goes with this. Now is the time in order to partake of that. To walk away from God's invitation is to walk back into a world where He is not, where He does not help you. You may enjoy some of the blessings that He showers on everybody, the rain, the sun, but you won't get the specific blessings that God offers to those that are His, protection, you know, food, shelter, whatever, plus salvation, justification, grace in every event. To have such a life as that, not only now, but to have it to be the only life that's available in the world to come, is something that God wants us all to be a part of. But we have to accept what He teaches. We have to accept His love and accept His guidance. And if there's anything we can do to help you along these lines, to get started through baptism, any kind of teaching, counseling, or just prayer, please let us know as we stand to sing.